there, and welcome to another edition of Conversation Collage, coming to you here from Wenatchee, Washington, USA, the Apple capital of the world and the buckle of the power belt of the Great Northwest. I'm Ken Johannesson, your host, and thanks for being with me. Appreciate it. We're going to talk to some interesting people. We'll talk about the things they're interested in, and at the end of this, maybe you'll learn something. We'll start off talking about food safety and how new technologies are revolutionizing the food supply chain. You know, we just passed World Food Safety Day. That was on June 7th, and it was created by the World Health Organization to draw attention and inspire action to prevent, detect, and manage foodborne risks. You might not realize just how common foodborne illnesses are. In fact, the WHO estimates that 1 in 10 people fall ill due to foodborne diseases each year. Centers for Disease Control in this country estimates that about 48 million people get sick and 128,000 are hospitalized from foodborne diseases each year in the USA. And not only that, there is no single end-to-end view of food delivery. Well, now here comes IBM with their Watson computer, and they are able to find new ways to put technology to work to add traceability to the food supply chain. And we talked about this with Suzanne Livingston, who is the director of the IBM Food Trust Network.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm fine. Where are you today?
I am in Massachusetts, just northwest of Boston.
Okay. Well, nice. Hopefully it's... am I too soon in saying it's getting somewhat back to normal or something close to it? Or am I a little off in my thinking?
It's starting to open, yeah.
Okay. Well,
More is opening up, more businesses, and there's certainly more traffic. So
good.
It's getting better.
That's good to hear. Well, let's get talking about about our food and traceability. The IBM Food Trust Network. What is that?
Yes, well, the IBM Food Trust Network is a network created by IBM, but with a group of companies who want to bring safer food to consumers, and has expanded from that original group. It's a data sharing platform where the food companies are able to see traceability back to the source farms and source producers, so that they know in the event of a food safety incident where food products are and how to get them off the shelves quickly.
Okay, so there's, up until now, I suppose, there's been no, am I correct in saying there's been no way of tracing from the very beginning to the very end, from where it starts to where it ends up in my house or in my mouth, for that matter? There's been no way to trace where it goes from each, at each point of the journey?
Right. So there have been a lot of tools to help with traceability, but what we really needed was a way to get companies to share that traceability data in a network where they're all connected, so that way we could see the full end-to-end visibility. And that is really where the gap has been. And a lot of companies can trace, you know, one-off within their own organization with one company that they do business with, or one step up, one step down, but they couldn't see the whole end-to-end. So blockchain has given us a way to create the trust needed to get those food companies to share data, even if they are in the network with competitors.
So tell me how this blockchain technology works in the supply chain. What does it do?
So with blockchain, when you submit data, your data cannot be tampered with. You can't edit it. No one else can edit it. And you continue to own it. It's a distributed ownership of data. So the data that you submit is data that you own. And then we added even more security on top of traditional blockchain, where you have access control on every single record you submit. Like, I can share that I am shipping a pallet of, apples to you, and only you see it, and anyone you sell that to sees it. So that level of security and visibility enabled trust, and that's what we get from blockchain. Blockchain has been used in a lot of like cryptocurrency examples. You hear a lot of news regarding that. but it's also enabling supply chains, like what we're doing in food, so that you have a record of all transactions related to a particular product. Hmm.
What type of foods are being used for this? What's being traced?
Yeah, so the system is capable of handling any type of food, whether it has, you know, one ingredient or 10, it doesn't quite matter. But the food companies who are coming on board and joining are ones that really span a number of different types. So the very first cases that we had of companies joining were around produce and romaine, leafy greens, where we saw a number of food safety incidents over the last several years. They wanted to be able to reduce the amount of time that it would take to find food products that are recalled or that are contaminated. So that was one. We have companies like Dole and Walmart and Albertsons who really joined to facilitate faster traceability and recalls. Then we have food products that are global, like, for example, Quarry Arctic, who produces salmon in the Arctic region of Norway, and they sell that salmon in Whole Foods stores here in the U.S. Now, a lot of consumers have a lack of trust in seafood. They, you know, one in five seafood products is mislabeled, and they're using our platform to show that they're traced back to the source, that they have the exact products that they are selling or what they claim to be, and also showing how those salmon are raised and practices alongside it. So seafood, produce, meat, eggs, some dairy, you name it, we've got a number of products on.
You say one in five seafood products is mislabeled. My dad was a crab fisherman back in the 70s. The blockchain wouldn't have helped. It might have helped him had it been around back then. But how is, I'm curious, how is seafood mislabeled? That seems to be like a human issue.
It's sometimes it's a mistake. Sometimes it's intentionally a mistake to get a food product purchased. I'll tell you, we had a company in Massachusetts here, New Bedford, Raw Seafoods, who, they produce scallops. And, you know, one of the reasons they found us is because when they sell their scallops in the market, you as a buyer don't know the difference between their scallop and the scallop next to them. You know, they look the same, they might weigh the same, they might have the same, you know, quality rating, but you don't know that they actually have gone so far as to invest in proper equipment and processes and enable traceability. So they wanted to allow consumers and restaurants who buy their food product to trace, so that you know exactly what food product it is that you're buying, when it was harvested, who is the captain on the ship, and even more videos about the process that they use. Mm. So that's one of the examples where, you know, a food product like seafood, they have decreased sales over time because consumers just don't trust that it is what it is. And now we have a way to show that trust back to consumers.
And that could also be a branding opportunity for seafood as well, because, you know, if it's from this brand, that it is safe and it's been responsibly harvested and fished and whatever. So there's a branding and marketing opportunity there as well.
Absolutely. So we started with the food safety teams, but we have seen a lot of interest from companies who are marketing their food products. In fact, one of the food products that's in our system, they promote it as being born on blockchain. It's a Tunisian olive oil company. I certainly didn't know before I met them that Tunisia had one of the best conditions in the world for growing olive, and that they already are in a lot of olive oils that are purchased in stores. Well, they wanted to let consumers know that Tunisia is a great place to grow olives. They show the process. They have their farms on. They show the way that they do flavor profiling for consumers, and all through videos that they share, in addition to the blockchain data to consumers. And that is, you know, certainly to help with the brand and also help consumers know that the locations that they are claiming to be are indeed the locations that they're from.
Mm-hmm. Right. And back to seafood here for a second. I mean, there's really no major brand when it comes to fresh seafood. I mean, you know, there are brands, but mostly they're for frozen products. But, you know, this can help build a brand for the fresh seafood industry as well. Suzanne, where does this go from here? What's next for this, for this type of technology?
Yeah, there's so much that is being utilized for food safety, but also for improvements in the supply chain and storage and insights on the food products. We are seeing more with consumer traceability, so expect that as you go into stores, you can take your phone out, and if you see a QR code, open up your camera, put it on that QR code, and you can see the journey for that food product. So that's what we are enabling now with different food products. And then, of course, you know, it's a difficult time for many food companies who are affected by COVID. Many companies need to find new suppliers. And so we have a component of our product, which is centered around certifications and documents. We're making that available to food companies to use for free until August 20th. To help them get through this difficult time. It's also a great way to find new suppliers and make sure that they meet your standards. So please take advantage of that, and you can find that on ibm.com/food.
I was just going to ask, where are some websites that people can find out more about this? And I guess you've just given me one.
There you go. And there's also good information there about the product, like demonstrations and client videos as well.
ibm.com/food. Do I have that right?
That's right.
There we go. You're all right. Suzanne Livingston, I thank you for a few minutes out. Best to you in outside of Boston. Hang in there.
Thanks, you too.
Suzanne Livingston there, who is director of the IBM Food Trust Network. And I should mention here that consideration for our chat with Suzanne Livingston was provided by IBM. It's Conversation Collage coming at you on your favorite podcast platform. We're on just about all of them, and we'd appreciate it if you can review us and like us and rate us, and also find us on Facebook and also on Instagram. We are on Conversation Collage Podcast on both of those platforms. And also tell your friends about us. We'd appreciate it. If you like our show, spread the word, all right, and bring more people into the tent. Logan Callahan knew the sexy lady lawyer was trouble. He just had no idea how much. Lacey Carmichael is not new to the so-called kidnap and ransom game, but she wasn't counting on having her nemesis along for the ride. So the Callahan brothers' story continues, and that is the synopsis, although brief it is, of the new novel called Smash and Grab by an author who is... very interesting lady. Her name's Lori Matthews, and this is, I believe, the second installment in the Callahan Brothers series, and we talked about all this and other things with author Lori Matthews. Lori, where are you?
I'm in New Jersey at the moment.
That's home base for you.
It is.
So how many books have you written?
So I've actually written 5.
Okay.
I have 2 out. The second one comes out today.
As a matter of fact, it is out, Smash and Grab, right? The hot new novel, the Callahan, and I'm saying that right?
Callahan,
the G is silent, the Callahan Security Series. So what gave you the idea to get into this?
This series, you know, I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do all kinds of bad things? To write the bad girl series instead of the bad boy series.
Ah.
And I thought about all the things I like to do. You know, at night when it's dark and people don't close the curtains and you get to see inside their house?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. Wouldn't it be fun if you're a thief and you get to walk through people's houses? Just in a nice way. I don't want to be creepy, but in a nice way. And I thought that would be sort of a fun thing to be. And I just went from there. So this series is about women who are... bad girls, meaning they're on the wrong side of the law, and the fun things they kind of get to do.
Ah, okay. Good deal. Now, your novels have generally been, I guess, thrillers with a little tinge of romance in there. Am I kind of on the right track?
Yes. They, you know, we put them under romantic suspense because there is romance, but they're really more of an adventure thriller. I would compare it with, you know, the in movies, the Mission Impossible, where there's always, it's a thriller, but there's always a romance involved somewhere in it.
Uh-huh.
Same type of thing.
Okay, great, great. So now we've got Smash and Grab, the latest one. Tell me about tell me about the Callaghan, I keep wanting to put the G in there. Tell me about the Callahan brothers. Who are they?
So there's three of them, Mitch, Logan, and Gage. In Smash and Grab, it's Logan. He's the oldest, and he's a lawyer. They all have a military background, but my favorite part of Logan is where his other two brothers were more in the special operations end of things, he was a JAG lawyer. So what I love about him and this book is he gets in trouble, and the heroine, Lacey, assumes he can do certain things, and he's like, no, I was in the courtroom. This is so not my thing. Mm-hmm. And she gets to call him on a lot of this stuff, and she actually ends up saving him a few times, which just, to me, is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
So these three brothers take over running their dad's, what used to be like a home security company, mm-hmm. and they build it into something else. And so there's a lot of personal security and cybersecurity and things like that. So this series is sort of their adventures.
Okay. All right. And here's Smash and Grab. What happens in book number two?
So in book number two, they suspect, there's an ongoing story arc through the whole series, and they're suspecting that Lacey might be a spy of sorts. So Logan is sent to go down to the Bahamas and just trailer for a week and see if their suspicions are correct. And they end up getting kidnapped because Lacey's dad is actually an arms dealer. So it's hilarious because he has no idea, and they get kidnapped together, and she's much more nonchalant about it, and he's all up in arms, and she's, for her, this is not the first time this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, once again, here we are, it's okay, we'll work it out, stop panicking. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Uh-huh, okay. So now tell me about Lacey. She's kind of the female protagonist in all of this, right?
Yes. She helps her dad with the logistics of delivering these arms.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also a lawyer. So she works mostly in New York, and then she comes down to help her dad to the Bahamas when he needs some help organizing some things. But her main goal in life, she actually wants to be an event planner. So part of this whole, her whole story is that she needs to tell her dad that she doesn't want to do this anymore, even though she comes from this long line of arms dealing family and the whole bit. She just wants to be an event planner.
That's kind of a dichotomous switch, arms dealer to event planner. I'm trying to figure out if there's some sort of skills that would come from being an arms dealer that would go into event planning.
Well, she's all about the logistics. So event planning
true.
Is all about logistics.
That's true.
So in her mind, she just wants to do happy things.
Uh-huh.
And her logistical skill applies. So she just wants to plan weddings and events and birthdays and happy things.
Uh-huh. I'm sure that met with approval from her dad, huh?
Yes, not so much.
Didn't think so. You want to give up all this to do silly little weddings? What's the matter
exactly.
with you?
Exactly. I mean, it's a hard concept, but that's okay because the part of Logan's story is that he wants to be a chef.
Ah, okay. So there's a little bit of a mixture there, so... Okay, right. Tell me about Lacey. Now, do you think she's a feminist with all of this?
Feminist is such a loaded word these days.
It is.
Different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
I think her and all my heroines, they're equalists. I don't know if that's a real word, but they see themselves as equal to men, and they don't feel or don't let themselves be held back in mm-hmm. their sort of the area they work, which is really sort of male-dominated, right? They're mm-hmm. on the wrong side of the law, and it still doesn't stop them. They don't put up with anything, and they're very strong. So in that way, I guess you'd call them feminists.
Okay.
They're certainly very pro-women.
Okay.
Pro themselves. They can do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Does that cause problems with the Callahans?
It does at times.
Yeah?
Yes, it does at times, because, of course, that's not... I think... The men aren't really prepared for their skill level in so many ways.
Mm.
So, you know, you're dealing with different situations, and it's often the female characters that save the hero. So it's great.
Does that often, does that make them feel threatened, you think?
There are moments, yes. Logan at certain points does feel threatened because, of course, he's a lawyer and she knows so much more about these things than he does. It takes him a little while to come around to that. But in the end, they need all the skills that they have combined to get out of their situation. So he has to adapt pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're a Canadian by birth, huh?
I am. I'm from Nova Scotia.
On the east, in the Maritimes, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then you moved to New York City, and then you've done a lot of traveling. Where does this travel end up being a character in your novels in some way?
It does. I try to set all of my books somewhere I've been.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent time in the Bahamas. It's set there, and of course, the Callahan Group is set in New York City, their uh-huh. main headquarters, and I've lived there for years. So everywhere that I've gone that's interesting to me, I try and set one of my books there so that I have a good feel for it.
Mm-hmm. I love New York City. I love Canada, too, but I've only been in British Columbia, so.
I've spent time in Vancouver, and actually the third book in this series called Hit and Run, which I'm editing now, uh-huh. takes place part of it in Vancouver.
Oh, okay. Good. Good, good. So now, where does Smash and Grab take off from Break and Enter? That was your first book. Is that kind of a continuation of the saga here, or is it more of a standalone?
It's sort of a combination in uh-huh. that each book is a story itself, but there is a story arc that goes through all three. So where the first one leaves off, they've stopped what was about to happen. I don't want to give it away. They've mm-hmm. stopped what was about to happen, but now they have to figure out who's behind it. So book two mm-hmm. has Logan trying to see if Lacey is the one who's behind it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So it will. So somebody can pick up Smash and Grab and be just fine, but it will help if one has already read Break and Enter and kind of get the main thing, the foundation, I'm trying to say, for the the series there.
Yes, that it would help, but yes, you can pick up Smash and Grab, and still I think you get enough from it that mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you're okay.
Who do you write this for? Do you write this for women or men?
I write it for everybody.
Yeah?
I'm not a specific group person. I don't sit there and think, well, who would like to read this in that way? I write stories I want to read, mm-hmm. and I write them for people who want to dive into a book and just get lost in the story and enjoy it. Yeah. I've had several male readers say to me how much they've enjoyed my books mm-hmm. and how surprised they were by it because they assumed it was more romantic than it is. Mm-hmm. And I've had other women readers who love romance tell me how much they love the romantic part of the story. So I think it's all in what you like.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm guessing that romantic, when we say romantic, we're not talking about a lot of bedroom scenes or anything like that.
Oh, there's a few.
Oh, is there? Okay.
There is, yes. Yeah,
it does get steamy at times. Okay.
It does get steamy at times, yes.
Okay, that's cool. That's all right. When people put down Smash and Grab and Break and Enter, what do you want them thinking? What do you want in their minds?
I want them to just think to themselves how much they enjoyed reading it. My whole point in writing is that feeling when you get, when you've read a book and you finished it and you're sort of sad that it's done, but yet you're so excited about the story. That's what I want everyone to think. Like, what a great story. I really enjoyed it, especially in what's going on now in the world. Mm-hmm. I just want to provide people something where they can put aside their worries and their fears and their stress for however long it takes to read the book and just enjoy it.
So then this is a diversion, an entertainment, if you will.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. You said book number three is on the way, right?
It is. It is. It should be out in June.
Okay. All right. And how long do you see this going, a particular number of books, or do you see it just kind of continuing on as long as you can keep it going?
I'm thinking it will be at least one more with the possibility of maybe another two after that, but no more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into the continual series forever. I think people get bored of that, and quite frankly, I would get bored of writing it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So maybe at most six books.
Yeah. Okay. How long does it take you to write? How long did it take you to write this one?
So it takes me roughly 3 months to get a first draft.
Uh-huh.
And then another probably month to play with it a bit more and get it to a good spot before it goes off to my editor.
When you're writing, and I've asked this of many authors, do you go kind of halfway through the book and then you find it kind of goes off, the characters go off, and the story goes off in a way that you didn't expect?
All the time.
Yeah.
As many times as I've tried to plan it out, and I'm not one of those people who really plan it and write every scene, like notes about every scene. Uh-huh. I'm more of a pantser, is what they call it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of go by the seat of my pants, but uh-huh. I do have 3 or 4 points or 5 points on a line that I want to hit. And oftentimes it happens, I'm writing along and then the characters do something completely unexpected and now we've taken a hard left and uh-huh. I have to rethink.
Uh-huh. Okay, so then you're no different from any other author I've talked to over the years. So
you know, you try and plan it, and the characters just kind of take over and tell you what they want to do.
Mm-hmm, right. Is writing fiction difficult for you? I mean, because it is totally creative. It totally comes from the imagination. Is it difficult?
I am super fortunate. Maybe I have an overactive imagination, mm-hmm. but my characters come to me fully formed, names, identities, the whole bit, and it's already there. So when I sit down to write, if it's difficult, it's because I haven't done something properly, like the last scene didn't work or whatever. And that's really the only time it's difficult. The stories are already in my mind all the time. I've often wondered what other people think about it, because in my mind, all the time, there's stories going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that it must be fun to do, then.
Great fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I absolutely adore writing, because it's the moment you get to play God with all your characters.
Do you do by longhand, or you do it in a computer, on a keyboard?
I do it in computer, but, you know, I'm of the generation, I have a pad of paper beside me, and I make notes the entire time.
Ah, okay, so you go back and forth then. All right.
I do.
Cool. So we got the new one out today as we're speaking, Smash and Grab. The next one's out in June. And anything else you're working on that we need to know about?
I have another book that I'm editing. That it's a whole new series, and that one will probably come out next year, and that one is more... like law enforcement based. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of this year, I'm very fortunate, L. James has something called the Brotherhood Protector series, and she has graciously allowed me to write in her world, so I will have 2 novellas coming out at the end of the year in the Brotherhood Protector series.
Busy lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good to keep that imagination going and keep me busy. Otherwise, it could be problematic.
No kidding. Lori Matthews books.com is the website, right? Lori Matthews.
Yes.
And I'm sure the books are available on Amazon and all the usual suspects, right?
They are. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, all those.
Every place there. Great. Lori, good talking to you. Best to you in Jersey. Hang in there. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
You too, Ken.
Lori Matthews is the author of Smash and Grab, and also her previous book in the Callahan Brothers series, which is called Break and Enter. She seems to be following a pattern there. If you'd like to know more, go to LoriMatthewsBooks.com and check out Smash and Grab, which is the latest Callahan Brothers mystery. And that will do it for the 39th edition of Conversation Collage. I thank you for joining me. I invite you to check us out on Instagram and Facebook, both under Conversation Collage Podcast. I invite you to tell your friends about us. If you can, on your podcast platform, rate us, review us, tell us you like us, please. We'd appreciate that. And, of course, join us for the next edition of Conversation Collage. Ken Johannesson at your service. Thanks for listening. Be good to yourself.